If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where the Lakers have finally made their first new non-rookie signings of the offseason. And just like we all guessed, it's Kyler Kelly and Quincy Olivari.
Hey!
Two needle-moving signings that have the whole rest of the West shaking in their boots. Quite the Olivar twist to the summer, if you ask me. Now you can say A. I am your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. And Tommy, they say good things come to those who wait. So was it worth the wait for Kyler Kelly and Quincy Olivari?
Yes. I have nothing else to say. It was worth the wait for me, though.
Okay. All jokes aside, I actually, for some insane reason, dove a bit deeper into Quincy Olivari's game, and I see a lot of intriguing potential in him. Like, literally, I'm not being sarcastic. I think, Tommy, book this. We're on record. I'm on record as saying this. I think Olivari can overtake one of the current two-way guys for one of those two-way spots at some point this season, because he is a flat-out walking bucket who also hit 41% from three in college, knocking down 3.1 threes a game. And for those who didn't watch the final Lakers Summer League game in Vegas because everyone was sitting, including Dalton Connect, Bronny James, Maxwell Lewis, well, that also happened to be the game that Olivari exploded for 20 points and hit 6 of 11 from downtown. So all that to say, watch out for Olivari, Tommy. So joke is on you. The wait was worth it.
It is on me. I was going to say, now that you're mentioning this, I saw some clip of Olivari dropping like 45 points in a college game or something. And I feel like, you know, for any D1 player, that's pretty impressive. So, I don't think he'll make the team, but if he's 2A eligible, then maybe he'll get one of those.
Yeah, he was number 2 in scoring in the Big East right behind Devin Carter. So there you go. So in today's episode, we are mainly going to talk about one topic, and it's a topic that feels very familiar to Lakers fans, and it's the notion of now or later with regards to when to make a substantial trade. Should the Lakers do everything in their power to make a trade before training camp to get all their books in order early, or should they wait to see what they have with this current group while also waiting out the unrealistic trade demands that other teams currently have? But first, before we get to all that, Tommy, the Lakers' full 2024-25 schedule just came out. We will reserve our deeper analysis on the strength of schedule stuff for a later episode, but what is the main thing that sticks out to you about this schedule at first blush? For me, I think the biggest thing that stood out was the fact that we have 2 less back-to-back games this season than last season. We had 15 back-to-back games last year, and this year that's cut down to 13. And given the ways LeBron James and AD have ping-ponged back and forth in the past with regards to each sitting out one of those back-to-back sets, I think having 2 less back-to-back sets could realistically be the difference between us having 2 additional wins by the end of the year. And then on top of that, the fact that 5 of our back-to-back sets are all at home and don't require any additional travel is very encouraging as well. So it's nice to see the league finally reward the elder statesman in recent FIBA Olympics MVP LeBron James with a less arduous schedule. So any other quick insight you want to share about the schedule?
The back-to-backs was the one that stood out to me the most, for sure. It's like you kind of pencil those in as schedule, at least 1-1 at best, is kind of what you're hoping for there. We did win some. I think we swept a couple at the end of last season, but we had so many, and they were so painful. And you and I were chatting a little bit about this before, but a lot of them are home-home back-to-backs this year, which it must have only been 1 or 2 out of 17 or 16 last year. We're home-home. I definitely don't remember. This year, it feels like half of them are home-home, which is going to help a lot. So other than that, it's like people get like so in the weeds. I just want to say already, the second the schedule comes out, it's like micro-analyzing the random 5-game stretches in like January. And I'm like, you guys know we play like... At this point in the season, everyone's schedule seems hard because, you know, 2/3 of the teams in the NBA made the playoffs last year. And like, a few more than that were competitive for playoff spots. So like, yeah, most of the games you're playing are going to be against playoff teams or teams that were close to the playoffs and on the rise. So like, I don't understand why every year we do this where it's like, look at all these hard games we have. And it's like, okay, we play the same teams. Like the breakdown of how the schedule works is the same. It's 41 home games, 41 away. It's the same splits almost every year. You know, you have the West, you have the one team you cycle between 3 and 4 games or with one conference. But it's like otherwise the same thing. It's crazy to me.
No, that's a fair point. And there's only so much projecting out you can do because you're not even sure what the roster is going to look like by midseason, who's going to get injured, et cetera, et cetera. I do think the Lakers have a pretty competitive start to the season, to your point. They are facing off against Minnesota, Phoenix, and the Sacramento Kings at home, their first 3 games. And then they go on the road to face Phoenix again, then Cleveland and Toronto. The only team there that isn't a surefire playoff team is Toronto, but they'll still be pretty tough. So, I mean, luckily, the Lakers have matched up and fared pretty well against the likes of Minnesota, Phoenix, and Cleveland. So hopefully that helps them stem the tide to start the year. But yeah, at this point, it's kind of useless to microanalyze what's going on with the schedule. So let's put that talk to the side for now. And let's talk about, Tommy, now or later with the Lakers. And let's talk about the tepid position the Lakers now find themselves in again, having a somewhat limbo roster that most know is probably going to be reshuffled at some point. And I think a good starting point for this discussion on whether the Lakers should shuffle their deck now or later is D'Angelo Russell and his awkward place in all of this once again, especially to start the season. He is the team's starting point guard and arguably the team's third best regular season player. And yet he's also the player most likely to be traded. And so D'Lo is in a really weird spot, not too much unlike the spot he was in at the trade deadline when everybody knew, including himself, that he was being shopped. And yet he was able to turn that around into one of his best stretches of his career. But this year, it kind of feels similar to the spot Russell Westbrook was in during the 2022 offseason, where he was finally an expiring contract. D'Lo finally is an expiring contract after having opted into his $18.7 million player option. The team had openly tried to trade Russell Westbrook at the deadline but failed. Same with D'Lo. The Lakers even more openly tried to shop Russell Westbrook that 2022 summer and failed again. And on top of that, they signed a bunch of guards to make things even more abundantly clear that Russell Westbrook would be moved eventually. And likewise, D'Lo is in the same situation of the Lakers reportedly having looked around once he opted in for trades, but they weren't able to do so. So that's where the similarities lie with regards to both Russells being in weird in-between situations to start the year off. But that's where the similarities end, because when it comes to the actual on-court value and fit of both of these players, they couldn't be any more different. You know, over Westbrook's 1.5 years with the Lakers, nearly every advanced metric pointed to him being detrimental to the overall product on the court. The fact that they missed the playoffs the first year with him healthy pointed to that notion. The fact that the Lakers started out the 2022-23 NBA season 2-10, even with Westbrook coming off the bench, also pointed to that fact. Meanwhile, with D'Angelo Russell, it's quite frankly been the exact opposite. He has perennially been one of the top plus-minus leaders on the Lakers every year. The Lakers made the playoffs both seasons and went to the Western Conference Finals last season with him as the starting point guard. And then to top it all off, in nearly every advanced lineup data, D'Lo shows up as one of the guard options leading those units in overall point differential. And then finally, as you all know, the Lakers closed out D'Lo's first year going 18-8. And then they closed out last year going 22-10 after Rui Hachimura was inserted into the starting lineup. And that's the stretch in which D'Lo averaged 20-6. Not to mention D'Lo just had the greatest single season three-point shooting year of any Laker ever. So in both situations, even while it's clear that a separation may be on the horizon, Westbrook's eventual departure seemed pretty clear cut and dry because of the absolute negative he was to what the Lakers were trying to do on the court. Whereas D'Lo's departure is a lot more complicated because not only do you need an aggregate upgrade for him in any trade, you also need to find someone who can fill in the gaps of what he literally does positively on the court in terms of volume three-point shooting and playmaking. So what do we do with all this information, Tommy? If there are pretty strong indications that said player will be moved, if for nothing else because his contract is expiring and you don't want to lose him for nothing, yeah, what do the Lakers do? What would you prefer them to do? And let me start you off with this more succinct question. How frothing at the mouth do you think the Lakers are to actually moving D'Lo? Where do you assign the percentages with regards to them not being able to make a move this offseason, particularly with D'Angelo Russell? Is it the fact that they don't want to give up a 2029 first round pick? Is it the fact that maybe they actually value D'Angelo Russell's on-court contributions and they want to make sure that whoever they're getting is an actual upgrade. Like, or is it the CBA? Or is it a combination of all three? Where do you land on all of that? And I guess the main question is, how frothing at the mouth do you think the Lakers are to actually moving D'Lo? And then you can take the conversation where you want.
So I don't think, you know, unlike a lot of other folks out there, I don't think they're frothing at the mouth to move him just to move him. I think if they were, they could have moved him already. You could find a bad trade any day, right? I think the thing with D'Lo is I think the organization understands, the front office at least, understands something, you know, that it seems like many fans don't, which is that D'Lo's value to the team, I'm not saying to the organization, D'Lo's value to the basketball team, the Los Angeles Lakers, is higher than his value around the league. And that's okay. Sometimes there is those types of mismatches. I mean, we've seen it many times. You see it more typically with, like, quote unquote system players who, you know, are with one coach or in one type of system for a really long time, and then they can't seem to break that or, like, work anywhere else. D'Lo is not, like, that's not his issue. It's like, for whatever reason, the rest of the league has such a low valuation on this guy, notwithstanding the fact that he continues to, like, I mean, last year he put up numbers over 76 games that, you know, the Lakers historically have not seen, you know, certainly as a perimeter shooter, right? But in the context of how bad we were for most of the season, and, you know, in the context of playing with LeBron and AD, D'Lo had a phenomenal year. You know, worse players have been moved for assets, and for some reason, nobody wants to pony up for D'Lo, and that's fine. But the result of that is that his value to us as an 18-point-per-game, 6-7 assists, you know, like 40%+ shooting from three on high volume is higher to us than it is around the league. And so I don't think the Lakers are into, like, a D'Angelo Russell and a first-round pick to get a role player. And I think that's what his value is right now. Now, if they could get a guy like Kyle Kuzma or, like, you know, a higher end, I don't want to even say role player, but like a higher end, like starter type player that is more comparable to D'Lo than, you know, but fills more of a position of need and plays defense and maybe, I guess Kuzma checks both of those boxes just as a random example, right? But I think in that case, they would pull the trigger. But I just, you know, those trades clearly are not likely. I mean, I put it at a very, very high chance that D'Lo is going to be on the roster this year. And to the extent he gets moved at the deadline, it's going to be the same thing as last year. If there is a trade out there that is a very clear upgrade, we'll do it. But if it's just moving pieces around, swapping a starter for a role player, you know, I don't think we're going to do that. I think the reason a lot of fans want to do that is because their brains are putting a value on the mental relief of not, they personally don't like watching D'Lo. They don't like thinking about him. They don't like, you know, envisioning him in playoff rotations. And so, like, getting him off the team is a value to some of these people. And you know, I'm not looking at it that way. I don't think the Lakers are looking at it that way. And so, you know, I think we're probably going to end up in a similar situation we ended up in last year, unless there's a guy who's on a multi-year deal and we might be able to get, you know, like maybe the Blazers finally move Jeremy Grant, or, you know, somebody in a Jeremy Grant-esque situation, maybe makes less money, something like that comes up at the deadline, then maybe, yeah, we move D'Lo. But I don't know. It's like, the disrespect that's been going on with respect to this guy has been pretty alarming, in my opinion.
But even then, for a guy like Jeremy Grant and Kyle Kuzma, it's almost like, shouldn't you then trade out the redundant people
at that position?
Yeah,
you really should be trading
the point guard.
You really should, in both of those examples, you should be trading Rui. But for, you know, it's like, right, fans, like, I get it. You become attached to certain players. Rui seems to play hard and play the right way. Austin plays hard, plays the right way. D'Lo plays well, okay, but he's just like a weird guy, and it just rubs people the wrong way. You know, it's like Austin and Rui are not going to show up in the offseason with bleach blonde hair, but D'Lo does that, and so, like, in fans' eyes, they you know, kind of view him as being less serious, and that's fine. You can think that, but he's like our third best player, and it's not even that close, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think, so we're going to get back to the awkwardness of still having him on this roster in just a second, but I agree with you that, you know, a lot of fans cling on to any sort of notion that, not a lot of fans, but a large portion of this fan base has clung on to any signs that the Lakers are ready to move D'Lo, you know, including JJ Redick has never once this offseason mentioned D'Lo's name. Never mind the fact that the only time that JJ Redick publicly came out and talked to the press was during his introductory presser when D'Lo hadn't opted in yet, but let's take facts out of the equation. So they'll cling on to things like that to say that he's clearly not part of what this organization is trying to do. And I agree with that from an asset valuation standpoint because he is an expiring contract. But with regards to just looking at the first half of next season and what the Lakers want to do on the court, Tommy, do you think there's been any internal inklings on JJ Redick's part at all? One of the best three-point shooters in NBA history, to maybe want to see what he can do with the player who just broke the Lakers' single-season three-point record last year in D'Angelo Russell. See if he can, you know, force that square peg into a round five-out optimal spacing hole. Do you think JJ Redick, there's any chance JJ Redick was like, hold on, let's see what D'Lo can do under my system?
Yeah, broke the single season record and also has played in a movement shooting system before with the Warriors. So yeah, of course he is. You know?
I feel like I'm constantly taking crazy pills when I have to talk about D'Lo. I can't honestly believe the stuff that comes out of my mouth when I try to contextualize his game or argue about something in his defense because everything sounds so ridiculously obvious and so matter of fact. And yet, you know you have to articulate these things because a large faction of the fan base just doesn't get it or they have selective memory about this stuff. We hire JJ Redick as our head coach, a guy who built his NBA career off of running off screens for three-pointers, and no one, or not a lot of people, seem to find it insane that fans were just so flippantly ready to get rid of the one player last year who made the team a viable high-volume three-point shooting team. You know, everyone was like, yeah, now let's get Colin Sexton and Bruce Brown. It's like, what? Is anybody thinking here? Anyways, now to the point of the awkwardness in the locker room of D'Lo knowing he'll be traded and whether that will affect his play and whether that'll affect the team's play for the first half of the season. Tommy, where do you stand on that awkward limbo aspect of things? I guess you could easily look back to last season and be like, well, isn't this the same situation he was in the trade deadline? And he used that as a motivating factor to like springboard himself into, you know, 20-6. But, you know, one could argue that it takes like a mental toll on a player to constantly have to go through these things. So do you think it'll be a problem? And what are your thoughts on the current debate going on right now in Lakers Nation about making D'Lo potentially a sixth man or slowly weaning ourselves off D'Lo and reducing his role to the point where the Lakers are less reliant on him so that when they finally have to make a deal for him, there's less of an adjustment period? Your thoughts on that collection of thoughts?
It's all silly nonsense. You know, D'Lo, these guys are NBA professionals. I'm so tired of this, like, oh, it's going to be awkward. Like, Cam Reddish has been on, like, five teams, and he's, like, 23, okay? These guys are professional athletes. They understand the nature of the job. D'Lo has a professional NBA agent who explained to him the risks of opting into his contract, the major one being that he is, you know, a $19 million expiring contract who could be traded. D'Lo played 82 games last year. The entire time, the LA sports media was saying that we were trying to trade him. I, you know, again, trying to trade someone is such a ridiculous way to phrase something. Like, were we listening to phone calls? Of course, if you can get Kyrie Irving for D'Lo, you should investigate that, right? But like, you know, we were not like calling the Nets and being like begging them for Dorian Finney-Smith for D'Lo. Like, that's how people like interpret these types of statements. It's just ridiculous, you know? So I think D'Lo, I don't know. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I think, you know, there is a path to winning with D'Lo. He has been in this situation multiple times. He's been traded like three times already in his career. He's an NBA professional. He's playing for a contract. We're going to get as focused of a D'Lo, in my opinion, as we got last year. In some ways, maybe more focused because last year he, you know, he was trying to disprove the narratives from his sort of playoff the way he went out in the playoffs the prior season, but he always had the player option as a fallback, right? And this year, he is a pure expiring contract playing for his next contract. So he's going to be locked in, and any player on this team could be traded, you know? So I don't know. I feel like that stuff's overstated.
I mean, I do understand the notion, obviously, of weaning yourself off of a guy who you know has a good likelihood of being traded eventually. That was essentially your argument with Russell Westbrook, right? Although I guess you could say, well, he's a negative, so if you get rid of him anyways, like, anything coming back will be a positive. So it's tougher with D'Lo because he's actually somewhat of a positive. So if you rely on him too much, you might have to change the whole nature of your team once he's gone.
Yeah, or you just, if you're relying on him that much, you just keep him. Like, again, it's like, there have been guys on expiring contracts before. I don't understand this, you know? It's, like, not the case. Like, we made the Russell Westbrook trade to get, you know, a handful of players, and we used a first round pick. We extended Jared Vanderbilt, and we extended D'Angelo Russell. 3 years of D'Angelo Russell at the, you know, or 2.5 years, whatever you want to say, at the you know, kind of output he's been giving us and the role he's been giving us, that was worth the investment. You don't just get to, like, no other team thinks that they're entitled to just keep cycling every time someone's on an expiring contract. We better swap it up for another asset. You know, it's like, you just keep him if he's that integrated, right, and helping you that much, because he's our third best player. He's one of the best players. Honestly, he is one of the top, you know, I don't know how you want to rank him, 20. He's clearly a starting caliber NBA point guard. So, you know, this isn't like rocket science to me.
Right. And I think ultimately I agree with you. I think it's a very Galaxy brain thing to do this. And if anything, you are starting off the season even awkwarder, you know, because it's like, that guy should clearly be the starting point guard. Why is he coming off the bench? This is exactly what Darvin Ham did in December that derailed our season, you know?
Yeah.
I get the part about not being so reliant on D'Lo and trying to establish a reconfigured identity for the starting unit and the team in general, but the Lakers just need to actually win games and tread water to start the season so that they can position themselves well for a trade come the deadline. So why then would we actively dismantle our starting unit with D'Lo that has continuity and that went 18-8 to close 2023 and then 22-10 to close 2024?
Yeah.
You are actively fighting back against the one thing that this team has going in their favor, Tommy, and that's the continuity of the core guys. So why?
Yeah, well, no, these people would want to lose games. They would rather lose games in the short term.
To be right about their favorite players.
Just to be right about that. You know, it's like crazy. It's like, let's not play our third best player because we might trade him in 6 months. Like, this is like complete nonsense, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And then the other thing I want to point out is, secondly, I just think that if and when D'Lo's traded, the Lakers need to get back a player who can approximate a lot of the things that he does well. So in my opinion, they should force themselves into playing the way D'Lo likes to play, Tommy, because he is the way we like to play. So he should be the stand-in for this type of player anyways. And so it's almost like forcing ourselves to make sure that whoever we trade D'Lo for is kind of like a D'Lo, but plays better in the playoffs. You know what I mean? So is there going to be an adjustment period? Sure, because it's a new player. But in terms of the style of play, if he's a spacing point guard who can also play make like D'Lo, then there shouldn't be that much of an adjustment period, you know? So I feel like, to your point about NBA players being professionals who know how to handle this stuff, NBA teams in general are also professionals, Tommy. They have dealt with flipped rosters at the deadline before. LeBron James especially has dealt with flip rosters. You don't think he's going to know how to handle, like, oh, shoot, we have three new guys that we have to integrate. We just did this in 2023 and went to the Western Conference Finals. Oh, yeah, I did it with Cleveland when we got Jordan Clarkson, Rodney Hood, and Larry Nance, and I took that team to the finals. Like, I think we have to give these players and the NBA teams credit for this is normal standard business, you know? I think people are putting too much weight on the mid-season adjustment period. You know, I understand that we have a new rookie head coach in JJ Redick, but I think we're giving that more weight than it should have.
Well,
you know?
And we're also assuming there will be a necessitated adjustment period. What if we can't trade D'Lo at the deadline? Let's trade him. This argument is like essentially, and sorry if I'm dumbing this down too much for the people who like buy this argument, but like to me, this argument feels like, well, we might trade him in February, so let's just trade him for anything now. What if we don't find another trade like we haven't been able to for the last 2 years? Like I just don't. We're just assuming that we're going to be able to find something for him that's going to be helpful. If we end up, it's February, and we're getting the same, like, okay, we'll give you Dorian Finney-Smith if you give us D'Lo in a first type of offers for D'Lo. Like, we're probably still not going to trade him because we're not just going to take Dorian Finney-Smith for no reason, you know? And yeah. It's completely... I'm so tired of talking about it. Won't we just extend D'Lo? I know we can't actually under the CBA, but it would be funny if we could. And tomorrow it just drops that we've extended D'Lo for 3 years.
Okay, so why don't we cool down, take it to break, and when we return, let's continue to talk about this, but more from the macro sense of the team and trying to get a deal done, whether it's involving D'Lo or not.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All right, so we're back. Let's talk more about the general notion of getting whatever substantial deal you want to get done now versus waiting at the deadline. On the surface, I think the obvious answer here is... I think the answer here is very obvious. Yes, if you can get a deal done sooner rather than later, obviously you do it now. Especially with a new rookie head coach in JJ Redick in tow, you want to give him as much of the core group of guys as you can to start the year off without having this, you know, ominous cloud looming over everyone that there could be a shakeup at any point in the season, a shakeup that will cause them to have to rejigger things on the fly and readjust, et cetera, et cetera. And again, similarly to everything we just mentioned about D'Lo, what makes this year different than the 2022 year, Tommy, is the guy that we were set to trade in Russell Westbrook was a huge negative to the team, so it was kind of easy to wrap your head around offloading him. But this year's team, I mean, even just taking D'Lo out of the equation, you have guys like Rui Hachimura, Jared Vanderbilt, even Max Christie and Gabe Vincent, all rotation players who could be part of trade packages. So if you're going to make moves involving these guys, like these are guys who are part of your, who are integral to your rotation. And so if you're going to make moves, it behooves the Lakers to do something in the offseason before training camp so that they have more time to acclimate everyone to their proper roles. But obviously that's easier said than done because we need to take into account the climate of the trade market. And I don't think teams should be prioritizing getting a deal done now over getting a good deal that makes sense later. You know what I mean? And as we've seen in the last few years, especially as far as the Lakers are concerned because of the Lakers tax, but even putting the Lakers tax to the side, it's in general just harder to make deals in the summer when teams have less urgency to do anything because everyone's kind of reformulated their teams. They're excited about the new crop of guys they have. They've made extensions, etc. So trades in the summer can be a lot harder to execute than at mid-season when guys start to get injured around the league and teams are like, oh, we actually need this player now. Or guys start to be disgruntled that they're wasting away on tank teams, like Dorian Finney-Smith. Maybe he's like, all right, I played nice for long enough. Like, please just trade me anywhere. And then teams also start to plan for the offseason and realize that they've held on to their players for too long and might not get the return they want back. And if deals do happen in the summer, Tommy, and you are able to consummate things, sometimes you get deals like the Russell Westbrook trade, in which the Lakers clearly lost their minds and were taken to the back of the woodshed and taken advantage of. So that's the type of deal you want to avoid, obviously. But where do you stand on how adamant are you that the Lakers should make their big / semi-big deals now versus at the trade deadline? And do you think that they might potentially lose leverage at the trade deadline by waiting, even taking the like, oh, we have to adjust at midseason thing out of the equation?
I just am not really persuaded by leverage arguments in any way, like we have leverage or we don't, just because I don't think there are trades out there right now. You can't spawn a trade from the earth. Like, you have to trade with another team who wants to give up a player. We've seen multiple teams unable to make any moves this offseason. Like the Warriors, they signed some free agents, but other than the Klay trade, which like that was basically Klay leaving as a free agent, they haven't really been able to do anything. The Miami Heat haven't been able to do anything. I mean, there have been multiple teams who, since free agency ended, have been like completely radio silent. And you know, if there was a splashy trade to make now, again, it's like we're assuming there is one, then yeah, sure, make it. I think if you have a trade that makes you better now, there's no reason to wait for the possibility that you might get something better in the future, if that's the question. Mm-hmm. But I just don't, you know, I think at the trade deadline, there will probably be more options because of everything you laid out. Every year, you know, you kind of see it. The teams that are holding on to assets now, when it comes February and they're out of the playoff race and they have a 3-year contract or 2-year contract that they can get out of this summer by trading for an expiring, that's when you start to see that kind of interest, right? It's like you see that kind of interest now a little bit. Of course, an expiring contract now is not any different really than an expiring contract in September, in February. But I guess the difference is teams' contexts change. Like you said, injuries, et cetera, lots of things happen. There could be teams who are breaking the bank this year and next year for like a 2-year window. And then all of a sudden, they lose somebody, one of their stars goes down for the season. And now it's like they're not going to make the playoffs. And so they need to offload some salary for next year because they want to re-sign X, Y, and Z. And, you know, they need to start thinking about long-term cap maneuvering instead of winning now. And those people are not going to know who they are until February. And that's why there's so much activity, right? It's not like there is a date before which a lot of guys aren't available for trades. You know, if you're thinking about like mid-December, but any trades could just, you know, happen now until February, but there's a reason they tend to be clustered, right? And they get clustered around February because that's when teams are like making their final assessments for how they see the rest of the season going.
But also on top of that, like the Lakers will have their full array of options open to them by December 15th, because by December 15th, that's when you can start aggregating as many veteran minimum contracts as you want again. You know, from December 15th to the trade deadline, you can stack up Jackson Hayes, Cam Reddish, and Christian Wood together, and that's like $9 million expiring. All of a sudden, you have that available to you where it's currently not available to the Lakers. And the one thing the Lakers have going in their favor this season is the fact that they finally have a pretty solid collection of multiple expiring contracts. Like last season's deadline, it was clear why they couldn't get a trade done. Like their one expiring contract was Torian Prince. He had a $4.5 million expiring deal, but Torian Prince was the coach's favorite son. You know what I mean? Favorite Prince. So they weren't able to get a deal done. This year they have D'Angelo's expiring contract. JHS is technically an expiring contract because he has a club option next year, although you'd assume that any team that trades for him would want to take a longer flyer on him on the cheap. You've got the three expiring guys that I mentioned in Christian Wood, Jackson Hayes, Cam Reddish, and then even the guys who aren't expiring in Rui Hachimura and Gabe Vincent. By midseason, Tommy, the other team is only on the books for 1.5 more years, you know? And then they can take advantage of Rui Hachimura's expiring contract the next season. You know what I mean? So the Lakers haven't made a move because, as we've been saying, like, the trade market just hasn't been kind to teams adjusting to the new CBA this summer, and teams want to take the time to further assess their rosters and what they can do under the second apron, the first apron, et cetera, et cetera. So the last thing I want to ask you, though, is, and I know your answer to this, but for me, is there value to just also waiting and seeing with this roster? This sounds like an obvious question and answer, Tommy, but is there a value to waiting and seeing what JJ Redick can do with this roster to start the year off? Because I know that this was the argument the front office made during the 2022 offseason when they hired Darvin Ham, and they were like, just watch and wait. Just wait and see what Darvin Ham can do with Russell Westbrook. And no one in their right minds was buying that argument, right?
Right.
It's the same argument this year, but it's an argument that I can buy very easily. You know what I mean? Because one, on paper, this roster seems tailor-made for JJ Redick and his five-out motion offense movement system for a high-volume three-point shooting team. And so, yeah, I guess your thoughts on the value of just first waiting and seeing, assessing this group, and then by the mid-season, you're like, okay, now we fully know what works, what doesn't work. If D'Angelo Russell is balling out again, to your point, maybe we do keep him, but make sure that we fortify the edges around him to make sure we account for his playoff deficiencies. Last year, D'Angelo Russell wasn't even that bad defensively, including in the playoffs. It's just the fortifications that we were supposedly supposed to have around him in the Denver series were injured. Vanderbilt was out. Christian Wood was out. Like, we didn't have a front line, and we didn't have any point of attack defending support around D'Angelo Russell to account for his, you know, few playoff failures. You know what I mean? And on top of that, Max Christie wasn't even playing. You know what I mean? So your thoughts on waiting and seeing with a group that obviously has a cap to their playoff ceiling, but in the regular season has proven that they're pretty good. And given what this new coach seems to want to do with the roster, it seems like it's a perfect fit too.
Yes. It is worth waiting and seeing. I think it's worth waiting and seeing for, you know, I think, okay, I guess, like, you can make an argument that any team is not a playoff team. You know, I think objectively looking at the West and looking at our team, we can mostly agree, probably as among fans, that the Lakers will at least be competitive for a playoff spot, right? Now, the question is, in the West, we don't know where they're going to fall. They won 47 games last year. Had they won like three games more, they would have been four spots higher or something like that, right? So it's all going to be pretty tight. And I think we know this is not a championship team, or we're pretty sure this is not a championship team. But how far away from a championship team are we? I think that's the thing that was tough about the Darvin Ham year last year, was we never really had a sense, at least I didn't really ever have a sense, how far away we actually were, because we were being coached like in such a regressive way that it was hard to tell how much, you know, how this talent, how far this talent could actually go. For that reason, you know, 47 win team, I think it, in a coach who has some new ideas, it probably is worth just seeing how good do they look in the first couple months? Like, I think, again, fans tend to like overemphasize the reports that come out. These people like need something to talk about, right? And so what ends up happening is, like, you know, you end up in these situations where, you know, Johan is coming up with like releasing these articles that are like, the Lakers are giving their team until December 5th, giving this group until December 15th to see how they do. It's like every team in the league is giving their team, like, these guys invested in these players, right? Like, Rob signed Rui Hachimura, signed Jared Vanderbilt, signed Austin Reeves, he even signed D'Lo. Okay. He gave D'Lo this contract. People acted like it was this catastrophic thing that D'Lo opted in. Rob gave D'Lo the player option. And now, frankly, we probably got him for below market value because of how weird the free agency market was this year. It's like completely absurd to me that you would even think that
he didn't want to see how this group looked together. He put the team together, you know? So of course they're going to be looking to see how these guys sort of fit, as is every other team in the NBA. We can set arbitrary dates of like, well, let's see how they look by mid-December. Well, let's see how they look by mid-January. It's a constant ongoing like assessment. It's a rolling assessment. You know what I mean? It's not like we're waiting for the December 15th Rob to call to order his front office meeting and decide if they want to make any trades. Like, it's just like crazy to me how we talk about this kind of stuff. But, you know, I think the team will be looking to see, wait and see how things go. And I think they're sort of forced to do it because of what we were talking about before. Like, there's no real trades out there. This is your group. Let's not make a 47 win team and try to make it worse. Let's just see if like these coaching improvements that we think we made are actually improvements, and how many wins does that buy you, right? Because it's like,
yeah,
we talked about this so much last year, but we finished the season with 47 wins. But how close were we? I mean, we had like so many throwaway games last year. So if you're talking about like coaching giving you, you know, advantages on the margins, a 47 win team could be a 49 win team or a 50 win team. I'm not saying we're going to, JJ is going to add a plus 10 win total with the same exact talent, but we were like a few games out of being a top four seed. I mean, what were the 4 and 5th seed? We're like 50 win teams. So like,
yeah,
you know, it just, and then the Mavs ended up making the finals with as a 50 win team. So I think there definitely is value to waiting. And I think, whether fans like it or not, we are going to wait because that's the situation we've been put in.
There's value in waiting, and again, value in holding on to the continuity of the core that you've built and not galaxy braining yourself into, well, this guy, we might move this guy, so let's wean ourselves off this guy. Here's a weird scenario where let's say we do bench D'Angelo Russell, and what if the team starts off, Tommy, 3-7, and then midway through, JJ Redick's like, you know what? This D'Angelo Russell thing off the bench isn't working. Let's start him again. And then all of a sudden, we're in this cycle of ping-ponging D'Angelo Russell on and off the bench, and we've just screwed up our entire sort of any continuity that we were hoping to build. In essence, it would turn out to be like a snapshot of what we did last season that totally took us off track after we won the IST, right? Where it's like, yeah. What if D'Angelo Russell off the bench doesn't work, and then you go back to him starting, and then that doesn't work as well? When if you had just started off with the matter-of-fact thing,
yeah,
maybe we would be a good team.
So the more and more we talk about this, right, is like you sort of start to understand why everybody hates Lakers fans for like coming up with this ridiculous stuff, as though like they've come up with this idea that they like galaxy brain this thing that nobody else could think of. It's like, to put it like, make another comparison using non-Lakers players, right? Brandon Ingram is going into a season on an expiring contract and wants an extension that the New Orleans Pelicans are not willing to pay.
Wean him off the bench. Let's wean off him and put him on the bench.
And like, look, they're not going to come to an extension agreement before the season starts. They're not going to come to a trade with another team before the season starts. He is going to be on this team when the season starts. Okay. And we know how his role and his mindset and how he views himself and the type of player that he views himself as, right? Compared to D'Angelo. It is like, could you imagine how, like, it would be laughable to suggest that, well, you know, it's not going to work out with BI long term. They need to re-sign Trey Murphy. They can't keep Trey Murphy and BI. They're going to keep Trey Murphy. It, like, one way or another, BI is going to get traded this year by the deadline. Some team is going to eventually, you know, take him off their hands. So just bring him off the bench. The Pelicans fans would like laugh their asses off. The Pelicans front office, everybody, NBA fans across the globe will laugh their asses off at the notion that you would be putting your third best player, you know, off the bench, losing potentially untold numbers of games, just because you might trade this guy in February.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit different with D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram for obvious reasons. Brandon Ingram's like a 6'9 wing. D'Angelo Russell is on the court next to Austin Reeves, so we know the ceiling of that backcourt duo, especially in the playoffs. But even having said that, I'm not necessarily opposed to D'Angelo Russell coming off the bench. I'm just saying, why the hell would you start the season off that way without any evidence that makes any sense? You know what I mean? So like, yeah, if the Lakers start off 2-8, Tommy, are you interested in maybe seeing what D'Angelo Russell can do off the bench?
if we start off 2-8, it's because something is wrong with our roster balance or like rotations sure. or lineups. So yeah, of course, at that point, you see what works. But no reason to go into this. No other team in the league.
Let's shoot ourselves in the foot.
Would handicap themselves the way that our fan base loves to handicap ourselves. Let's take objectively our third best player, who has been a former All-Star, who's like had countless accolades, who literally has the franchise record for three-pointers made in a season, and bring him off the bench for no reason other than it gives me psychological comfort that if they trade him in February, at least I've gotten used to the starting lineup now. And so you know what? It gives you comfort at the end of the year when they talk about which lineups have played the most minutes. Our starting five will be up there, baby, because we didn't waste all that time. That's let's hang a banner. Most minutes played by a starting five in a single season. The Los Angeles Lakers 24-25 roster.
Yeah, never mind that D'Angelo Russell was the number one non-LeBron player who passed the ball to Anthony Davis the most last season. It's like, what are we doing here? And lastly, with regards to losing leverage at the trade deadline, if anything, Tommy, the Lakers stand to gain leverage because these stupid teams like the Nets, and we've seen this with the Bulls, holding tightly onto their assets, asking for two first-round picks, asking for one first-round pick, they will, as time goes on, their assets don't gain value. Yeah. And as time goes on, if the Lakers maintain some common sense intuition and stick with continuity, if the Lakers are a top four team by the start of December, like they were last season when they won the IST, they're not going to look as desperate. You know, people are saying, oh, everybody knows the Lakers are going to have to trade, are going to have to make a trade by the deadline. And I'm like, do we have to make the trade? We are holding the most valuable non-LeBron AD first-round picks in this LeBron James Anthony Davis era. To me, we hold the cards, and if we are a top four West team by the end of December, which I think we can be, if the Lakers just don't have that post-IST lull that they had last season, and if JJ Redick doesn't totally fumble the roster configuration in December, I think we stand to gain leverage, you know? So, with that said, that'll do it for this episode. We got ourselves super worked up over, I guess, maybe some of the most common sense things, but we just wanted to make sure to get that on record. With that said, we will catch you guys next time. Follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app and Spotify. And yeah, we will catch you guys next time. Tommy, I will see you later.
Peace.
Laters.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.